right on the eyes now. I saw several of you squinting in the house. The sun, I think, was directly in your eyes. Is the sun in your eyes now? No? Okay. I'm okay. I got glasses on. Dark glasses. Plus, it goes back right after a while. We are happy. We have Swami Amavilasi. He's given a nice course in the morning. This is his first visit here to Gita Nagari, but I think third or fourth visit to America. And he will be with us tomorrow as we serenade Lord Jagannath. We will try to get Jagannath's darshan, but he will really be observing us to see what is happening in our hearts and in our minds. And I see Malati Manjari and Jamuna Devi Dasi. They have some of you, a couple of you with us in Cleveland at the Lord Have Mercy Festival. And then the next day we had a program at Agni Hotra's house. And we had a chance to speak on the book that they've just written. We took advantage of the opportunity that Chandamali Swami was there, who wrote the epilogue, because I wrote the foreword. Anand Maharaj wrote the introduction. And these wonderful mothers wrote the whole book. You have heard a lot about Padini Devi Dasi. And so they will be selling the book while they're here. And I sent them a message that I want them to leave me one case also, so we can distribute to some of the devotees. So please take advantage of trying to get that book. I think, Vinyoni Chuta, you have a copy? You have one already? I also want to just mention, nothing special, I just wanted to share one or two things. Since I leave tomorrow, I'll leave around 4 o'clock, the latest 4:30. And unfortunately, or fortunately, there's a wonderful festival and conference in Italy. So I start my tour starting there. And they're already about 3 or 4 days into the festival. Once a year, the Pandavasenas, young Indian devotees out of England, they have a retreat in a particular country. And so at that time, they take off their jobs and work. Most of them are either schooling or working. And so for sometimes 5 to 10 days, and they will have very concentrated reflection, studies, and courses given. And this year, Bhakti Chul Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj, and myself were to be the main presenters. And all three of us actually backed out because of other commitments. And I wasn't also thinking I was going to back out, because tomorrow is the Radha Yatra for Gita Nagari. The next day is Detroit. Both places I have GBC responsibilities. But as we notified them, they had mentioned that most of the devotees had already taken off and they had paid for the retreat, and all three of us were not going to be able to show. So I said, well, I'll come, but I'll come 3 or 4 days after the retreat has started, and I'll just double my courses while I'm there, probably morning and evening, or morning, I'm sorry, afternoon and evening. And of course, I'll be back in November or December, unfortunately in the wintertime. So it's a little intense for me this time, because I was just looking yesterday and I think I'll be doing 22 different courses at different places. So literally every place I go, I'll be giving 3 to 1 week's course, a 5-day course. This is why you haven't seen me, and I apologize. Just like sometimes in the secular world, there are complaints that some politicians are more, like sometimes there's an issue like this about some of the presidents. They may focus more on international policy and minimize, let's say, domestic policy. So perhaps I was like this this trip to Gita Nagari, that although I was here locally, but I'm even more into international concerns, as well as trying to finish writing up some books. And we timed it pretty nicely, almost. If I had a week more, I could have done everything I expected to do this month and a half or 2 months. We wanted to have all arrangements so that we could finish 3 or 4 more books by the time the year is out. think if I had maybe 1 week more, the way that the Harinam Press team is moving with the editing and things, I would have more time just to finish this last chapter of the last book that Lita Katar is working on now. But she'll send it to me while I'm traveling. So we I think, did quite good in this time. But it was a sacrifice because I was only giving classes here on Sundays when I was here. And even then, it was mostly for the TV audience because we filmed those programs for our TV program in Washington, Maryland, Virginia, which shows to a diversified audience. So it's more like a Sunday, general Sunday feast class, or discussing a certain particular topic. Now, I don't expect when I come back next time that I'll be unavailable, but let's see what Lord Krishna arranges. Sometimes you didn't even know I was here. I was doing marathons, or you saw me walking in the woods coming over. But we will see. Just one or two things I wanted to mention. The main thing is that because I won't see many of you for quite a while, and feeling that I just wanted to check in with you, you to check in with me. Of course, we have the African devotees here who will be staying for a little while, and we'll be trying to find. They'll be trying to find some ways to further some of their work with the school and the clinic and farm in Africa. So Shivas is going to head up some explorations in those areas, and some of the devotees in Washington, Detroit will be networking with them in these areas. So maybe one or two things I wanted to just share briefly. If there's anything on your mind, we can take this little time to discuss it. And we'll get Amavilas Maharaj's help in answering some of your questions. He is a very merciful devotee, disciple of Srila Prabhupada. So wonderful, he's visiting us, bringing us some of the dust from Bart Barsa. One thing I'd like us to reflect on is that the things that we experience in this lifetime, the country we're born in, the gender we are in, the body that we're in, the obstacles that we are faced with, has so much to do with our previous life's failures. We can reflect and consider that unless one has come in from liberated state just to help to save us all, basically material life means that we failed last time because we didn't take a spiritual body. So just like if you are trying to figure out a problem, or you are taking a test, or you're going to a school or something, and you're having to, in school, repeat the course, or what you did didn't work out, and so now you have to do it over, whatever the work was. So the fact that you have to do it over is a message that certain things need to be adjusted, that certain things need to be avoided, that some areas that we do not give the attention and the care and the focus to, that same thing can happen again if we keep in the same effort. Sometimes there is amongst the materialists, they quote Einstein, who an interesting reflection said that we cannot solve a problem in the same consciousness that we were in that created the problem. So we really can't bring a healthy closure. We can't resolve issues in our lives and our families and institution if we have the same consciousness that produced it. Obviously, that consciousness producing such problems means that there's something unhealthy or improper about the consciousness. We also understand that everything is a manifestation of consciousness. So our two points we want to share today. First is this point of that realizing that we didn't do so well in the last lives. So we've taken on so many bodies. Now the question is, in the next life, do we miss it again? Do we miss the point? In the next life, based on what we're doing now, do we do the things now that will guarantee that we get it? Do we do the things now that will guarantee that we don't have to go through some kind of repetition? And it's quite unfortunate and sad when someone fails. Many times, you know, the person is so close and they fail. Just like some of you have failed driver's tests. And, you know, later you see what you did wrong in terms of written or what you did in the actual agility, moving, driving. And sometimes you realize, oh, this is unfortunate. I just missed it by just one or two issues. Or you feel, this is unfortunate. I knew what I should have did, but somehow I just wasn't sure. Or I knew, but I just wasn't properly attentive. So now there's huge sadness. Because you have to do the whole thing over. So imagine what happens to the living entities when they leave the body and they have to go before Yamaraj, or they have to go before the devas who have an integral role in trying to arrange for our next existence, have an integral role in informing us of a review of our lives. And so, in so many cases, we have had to go through such hundreds and thousands, in some cases hundreds of thousands, even millions of times. And this is the sadness of material universes, that they have this millions, in case billions of people, even in this universe, instead of other universes, of people who were close. Because it's not that the acharyas are giving us something that is so difficult, that is so far from reach, far from grasp. It would be considered cruel if that was the case. It's like we know if a teacher gives students assignments that's so difficult that nobody, or practically nobody, can pass it. It would be considered to be a merciful, kind, and proper teacher. A teacher gives a student something so easy that it doesn't even matter whether they take it or not. It's also not doing the right thing for helping the kid, for the child to be able to mature. So there's a need for some challenge, there's a need for some stimulation, there's a need for some motivation, but not that is beyond reach or beyond the probability that one is more likely to be successful. So we're finding our individual and collective struggles to be overwhelming. We should remind ourselves that the Lord doesn't give us, Krishna doesn't give us anything that's too difficult. But the difficulty becomes, first, in a lack of appreciation of how much help is there, lack of appreciation of how close we are and can be, lack of appreciation of being properly, of course, attentive to be able to pass that test, driver's test or class or whatever. And so when we fail, not only do we miss the chance now for achievement, but a whole lot of time, energy now, has to go for redoing something. A whole lot of energy now goes into the frustration and the anxiety of feeling also left behind. Because the soul is in full knowledge. And the soul, as well as some aspect of the subtle body, is aware of the possibilities of success. And the soul knows exactly what ultimately is achieved and attained when one is in the original Sarup, back in the association in Vrindavan. But the body and the mind is so crazy that it wants to hang out and go through the suffering again and again and again. So it seems a little harsh to say that each of us is responsible for our own suffering. But it is emphatic. Because we all have the ability to codify and perceive things in various ways. And that brings me to my second point. My second point is that we can understand that we are really growing, especially on things that could and perhaps should bother us. No longer bother us. I say that again. We can understand that we are making nice spiritual advancement on things that could and should, perhaps, in normal situations, bother us. No longer bother us. Because we are so captured in thinking of Krishna, his nama, rupa, guna, lila, his name, his qualities and form and pastimes. And we're so much identifying with that and identifying with our real ultimate nature, the things outside of glorifying Krishna and things outside of our own authentic nature have very little impact on us. Transcend it. So many negative things, they have nothing to do with Krishna or to do with who any of us really are. Just like if some you hear in the news that such and such person, such and such neighborhood, robbed a bank. It doesn't really have a big impact on you because it wasn't your neighborhood, it wasn't your bank, you weren't the person, and most likely didn't even know the person. And so it's something you heard, and you're a compassionate person, ethical person, spiritual person. So you have some feeling that somebody is being sinful, somebody has abused someone, somebody is causing disturbance to society. But personally, that situation has come somewhat detached from you. So all things that don't somehow connect us with Krishna, it has really nothing really to do with us, really. And so if we get too worked up, too upset, too disturbed, too much identifying with such, then it means we are not getting it. We're allowing the body and the mind to be so prominent and dominant in our existence. And so we are allowing the illusion, mohan, we're allowing the prison atmosphere and activities, and we're allowing ourselves to identify with it. And as we identify with anything, we draw some of it more around us, to us, and our ultimate experiences are in connection with what we identify with. So if you reflect on these things, that having a material body means that we missed out last time. It means that there are some serious issues that were so dominant in our consciousness that we had to take another body and to have certain kind of issues and problems to deal with as part of what was necessary for us now to try to do it again. So every time we look in the mirror, every time we have to do the bodily things, eat, meet, sleep, defend, all of these things, every time we feel any of the anxieties, particularly that has to do with just trying to survive in the material world, we should realize, to what degree are we using those things for freedom, or to what degree are such things putting us back into the environment of incarceration? So this is a trick, Maya, to get us so much identifying with so much that has nothing to do with Krishna, that we lose our chance to be with Krishna. And so it really shows, and that's the second part, is that when we have to deal with situations, people, issues, and problems that could and should normally bother us, but to the degree that we realize that it has very little, almost nothing to do with our authentic identity, and we just see it, reflect on it, as somebody who robbed a bank in some neighborhood, in some environment, at some particular time, and so we heard about it, and we reflect on it, but we don't overly identify with it. Now, to the degree that we identify with the things that are separate from Krishna, or things that are entangling, to the degree that it lowers our consciousness, to the degree that we suffer. You know, think about your own quotients of suffering. Is suffering more prominent in your life than your happiness? Is suffering more prominent in your life than your excitement about service? Is suffering more prominent in your life than your thinking devotionally about sadhus, about guru, about the mellows of, you know, Shastra? You know, most people would have to say yes. Most people, unfortunately, would find that so much integral and part of their life is suffering. Reflecting on what isn't going right. So much of their life is based on anticipating what else is going to go wrong. So much of their life is disappointment that life itself has not given them such opportunities that they would like to have. But we forget that life in the material world is, in fact, a distraction from who we really are. And that life in the material world is a chance to try to repeat certain things or to have certain things confronted to us to see what we're going to do. Identify with it. Get overworked up by it. Get entangled by it. Or to what degree can we and mood of detachment? So this is why the most major anga or quality of devotion is sarup lakshana, is dependence on the Lord. Doesn't mean being naive, doesn't mean being impersonal, doesn't mean to be in denial. It means not playing in to that which is separate from Krishna. I gave a series of lectures in South Africa on aparad and explaining how aparad means being out of the mercy or separate from Radha. And so as we are engaged in things that are unhealthy to us, then we're separating ourselves in that way. And separation means, okay, you separate yourself from graduation, separate yourself from Ultimate Association. And so now we are to have experiences based on that separation. And that is basically all I wanted to share this evening. The two or the three points. First, I wanted to just thank you for being tolerant of my absence this interesting month and a half. I was in a workaholic mood of trying to set everything that I needed to do for the next three or four books in the biography. And so I've pretty much done most of that. So as I travel, I can be pretty present in the environments and with the courses. And I wanted to bring to our attention that we have chances to have victory this time. We say, Jai. Emphasizing that, yes, victory, victory. Jiva Jago, wake up to what? We wake up, we take notice of what is in the environment. We wake up, we're not so much creating, but we are now being sensitive. So the acharyas are telling us like this. Jiva Jago, rise, to wake up. Don't be a failure again. And then we were sharing that. Particularly we can take notice of what disturbs us. Because that is where we put so much energy into. And so if we're getting disturbed by the same kind of things, separating ourselves from ultimate Siddhanta destination. Material world means misery. It means an environment of anxiety. As we've been discussing karma, kroda, lobha, moha, matsari. This is just material world. Even when somebody personally assaults you, you are being properly devotional, your major thought is feeling sorry for that person. About how this person is hurting their own spiritual life. If your first thought is feeling sorry or angry yourself because of what he or she said, that is too much reacting, too much your energy. If your thoughts die, well, Malati, she's coming out with four legs. You know, in Vaikuntha they have four arms. She has four legs. So that means she's at the door of Vaikuntha. So, if she needs another chair, that's more comfortable, get one from her out of the house. So that point we're bringing closure on is that when our thinking is constantly on Krishna, that even when something is personally toward us, we do not allow it to be separate from Krishna. But we take it in the mood of still maintaining certain devotion and compassion. And even feeling some sadness of someone who is missing a chance to graduate themselves. And when something happens to us personally that we have done to ourselves, then we look at it and think, oh, so I made a mistake. And I am going to learn like anything from this mistake that I made. So it doesn't allow us to get too separate from Krishna. So I pray that you just reflect on these simple points and die wondering how you way from France? Yes? Just London. Oh, wonderful. We're just having, ending a little discussion on focusing on having, being a mature world. It's a sign that we didn't make it last time. It's a sign that there are some things we need to do differently. And we're looking at issue of particularly things that make us disturbed, to check in to see if we're becoming less and less disturbed, or becoming, avoiding us disturbing of same kind of problems. So let us stop at this point and let's see if you have any questions or any comments. We know that our focus in spiritual life is to come to a point that there's no separation. So we know the most important aspect of devotion is always to think of Krishna. The most important thing to avoid is to never to forget the Lord. So there's so many things that are coming to our life, to our life space, as either they help us to think of Krishna, or can play the opposite and help us to forget who we are and what we are ultimately trying to become. And while we keep forgetting, after a while it becomes a habit and becomes our culture. So every time that we make a mistake, we fail, every time we lack the chance to give devotion and to receive devotion, and those failures build up to a certain point where we begin to think that that is ourselves. The Maya causes us to think that we can't even get out of it, and we feel miserable. So you look at your own consciousness to see to what quotient are you finding that there's more of suffering that you're experiencing, or is there more excitement and happiness and gratitude and appreciation, amazing opportunities and possibilities that Krishna makes available? And sometimes it's not even what you do externally, but it's more of what you are focusing on internally. And you can always be an internal success if we don't separate our consciousness from Krishna. We can even be an external success, and that can be a trick to bring us farther away from who we really are. So yes, mature life is miserable. The immature body is miserable. And it has so many ways to harass us. Being in a mature world, mature body, is a wonderful way to remind us that we don't want this. We want out of this. We want better than what is offered by Durga Deva. We want better than anything, any kind of combinations and permutations of Mahatattva, the gunas. But our desires and our consciousness will determine what we get, what are we becoming. So, your question? Mm-hmm.
Yes, my understanding is that to be successful spiritually, one needs to be humble. So if one is humble, is it possible for such a person to think of a success?
So I'll let someone who's humble answer that for you. All right, can you answer the question? The importance of being humble. Yeah. Okay. So he's saying, it seems to be some complication of thinking and trying to be successful at the same time trying to be humble.
The success is dependent on Krishna. It's not dependent on our, we depend on Krishna, and then that makes you success. Automatically you become humble. If you depend on Krishna, then you become humble. Without depending on Krishna, we cannot be humble. We can see the life of Prabhupada, how humble Prabhupada is. So we have to depend on Krishna all the time.
So we're thinking that we are responsible for the success or the failure, especially the success, then there'll be a problem. Maharaj is just saying, we do the necessary, we depend on Krishna. So then if we're doing the necessary and depending on Krishna, then we can offer the results to Krishna. Being arrogant, as we are, or having such huge false ego, is we are taking the results ourselves, considering that we are distinctly responsible. We are the Aishwarya, the controller. And so this is one of the kind of pitfalls where one falls deeper into Maya by success. It's like it's one of the pitfalls in business sometimes also. There are so many companies that have gone bankrupt or folded because they were successful. So many institutions have folded or had trouble. Even our own institution, to a certain extent, some of our problems are due to our previous success. Meaning that sometimes a company, institution, based on the environment or the time and the variables that they had to deal with, that they were successful in doing something a certain way, a certain time. But then there are situations where some things change and they keep doing what they did before in the exact same way. And now that company that was very successful because they were just captured in their own idea, maintain it, and then there's failure. So Maharaj says, when we depend on Krishna, then there's always that variable where we're trying to look and think, now what will bring about the most Krishna conscious effect? So we're not just looking at it in terms of only our intelligence only, or how to manipulate material energy. We're looking at what will bring about the greatest Krishna conscious effect. So that becomes the nucleus or the barometer. And then we keep or change or alter or whatever based on what will be most pleasing to Krishna, what will bring about the most Krishna conscious effect. And it takes humility to do that because it means that one must constantly be ready to move outside of her or his comfort zone. It's a lot easier just to do mechanical or do something and claim the results and try to dominate, but to move out of that and to think, well, what will be most pleasing to Guru and Krishna? And now one eagerly gets involved in such. That's humble, because one is putting themselves out of the center, installing the deity more in the center. Other questions?
Thank you, Gurudev, and wish you a successful traveling. You spoke of the soul is aware of the possibility of success. So that means lifetime after, because the soul is eternal and always knowledgeable, lifetime after lifetime, the soul is aware of the possibility of success in that lifetime. But then you stated also that the mind wants to hang out, so to speak. So if when we're not being successful with the soul knowing the possibility, is it that it's the mind that, because we talk about he's covered, she's covered, or we're covered and conditioned. Is it the mind, and how do we move through that to allow that success to come through?
So she's asking, so the covering, the soul knows, but we see at the same time, one finds himself in a mature body, mature world. So what is happening? Is it the mind that's causing the covering? How does that happen if the soul actually knows everything?
First of all, I wanted to know what is success. Success in spiritual life? By surrendering to Krishna. Without surrendering to Krishna, we cannot be successful. Surrender. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Manasa Dehadiya Jokichuna Haripilitiya Padanyaya Kishuna. My body and the mind and words, our life, soul, is surrendering to the Supreme Lord. Only say, we become successful. Everything we have to surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. Engage in the loving service to the Supreme Lord. Those who are surrendered, they are always 24 hours engaged in service of Krishna.
So this, you know, if you have something, you surrender it over, you're no longer claiming control of a proprietorship, isn't it? Shivanagati is the surrender. Nice way of looking at some of the kids, you know, they have something and the mother asks for it. And the kid runs into the bush, runs away. He tries to hide it. The mother knows, come on, John, bring it. Give it to me. And the child tries to ignore the call, deny it, even lies. He says, I don't have it. Now, the unfortunate thing is the kid is having something that's dangerous that's going to be harmful. And so the mother says, bring. And the kid says, I receive. So, this is a mundane example, but the acharyas are beckoning. The sadhus, they're beckoning. Sent by Krishna to take away that which is a distraction. Somebody said, I want this. No, I want it. I'm going to take it. And so, this is how national states also interact. Like insubordinate children. Sadhus, they're beckoning, sent by Krishna to take away that which is a distraction to our health, our spiritual health. And they do this again and again within yugas and different lifetimes for us, and even many times within the same life. Krishna will arrange. Try to have some situations that take away that which harms us and blocks our ability to receive it. This is material energy. Our ability to receive His love. But we do like the stubborn child. Let's say your children are growing up and some of them are getting their own personalities now. They're not babies, and some of them are becoming teenagers. Sometimes you see how they just assert themselves. And sometimes they can be little rascals, and they say, no! Hmm? And they look at you like, you know, get away! I want this. I want to enjoy this. I want to tear this up. Let me do it. So this is the mentality of the living into the immature world. Krishna is finding many ways to try to allow us to be free of that which is improper. And we say no. And so when we say yes, and that is our surrender. We say yes, thank you. And we mean it. And that is our surrender. So disturbed that they go and break even more than they did last time. So we're taking it away. Taking it away like that. Huh? And Krishna decides the way he's going to take it away. Thank you, Krishna, for taking away my fame by making me infamous. Thank you for taking away my health by putting me in such a situation. Thank you for taking away my youth. Thank you for taking away my comfort. Thank you for taking away my so-called lover. Somebody does that one also, huh? Thank you, Krishna, for taking away my money. Huh? We don't like that one. Well, thanks, Krishna. Let her have her way, and she'll see. So when Krishna arranges for us, his devotees, we say no. The Lord servants, they say, okay, try it again. Experience the misery from the lifestyle of separation. Experience the misery and the pain in being crazy again. Once you have finally had enough of that, then maybe later you will have less and less to the point you have no interest in involving yourself in that anymore. And then sometimes Krishna arranges to give us a spanking. The kid says no. And mother says, all right, time out. And daddy says, what did you say? Come here. So there are times when we learn from the spanking. But now what happens to some kids when they get spanked or they get time out? Some of them become more angry. Some of them become so disturbed that they go and break even more than they did last time. They kick something, broke a window. Now they're so disturbed that they got shouted on, that they got denied. They go down the basement, go upstairs, and they break now three windows. And so then they didn't get it. But what did they get? They got now more chastisement. And the deity says, now you're not going to go out for 2 weeks. And this is what samsara takes place. How we codify and perceive things is so important. To the degree that we take it separate from Krishna, or we see it in connection with Krishna, to the degree that we're accepting or we're surrendering and becoming freed from the proprietorship. So just imagine a couple of billion people on this planet, basically, like little kids, who are just saying, no, I want this, I want that, I'm not going to go. Do it yourself. This is material energy. Krishna says, all right, here's a place where you can do all of those things. Material body, material world. You can be with a lot of other people who have similar type of craziness. You can all say no, no, no to each other. Fight. Wars. Fist fights. Wars with other types of weapons. Somebody say, I want this. No, I want it. I'm going to take it. And so this is how national states also interact. Like insubordinate children. I want you to do this, do that. If you don't, I'm going to fight you. If you don't, I'm not going to give you. loan. If you don't, I'm not going to offer you foreign aid. If you don't, let me have some of your resources. Let me use them as I desire. Then I'm going to arrange a coup d'etat and throw you out of the position. If you don't allow this. And so this is going on. Just like little children who are obnoxious in some ways by being stubborn. So when we become mature as spiritual beings, where we honor a real sense of maturation, a real adulthood, or to what degree do we have these adult bodies, but still we have the consciousness of stubborn children who then give pain, you know, pain to each other. When you see children who are stubborn like that and they interact with each other, they just throw each other's toys. They pinch, fight, kick each other. And everybody suffers. But when there is a nice mood of association and there is coping skills and lack of selfishness, then you have Vrindavan, where everyone is like children, just playing very freely and constantly absorbed in festivals. I mean, isn't it a fact? I think we'll talk about tomorrow a little bit more, but if we think of Vrindavan, we think of youthfulness. Vaikuntha, void of anxiety. We think of a situation where there is just joyfulness everywhere, all places. Any other question? Where's the microphone? Hand it.
Gurudev, about a week ago, Prabhu Shivas gave a Srimad Bhagavatam class. And I was really horrified, and I'm still horrified by a particular discussion that is on offenses. So, in that class, it was said that if one even commits an offense, and the person that has been offended should act in such a way that he does not create other offenses to the person who has so-called offended him. And when we link that to karma, we see in the case of Dhritarashtra how he was born as blind, and Chitraketu Maharaj, how he was married to 100 million queens, and none of them could give birth, all coming from previous karma, because they did certain things that they have to face such particular karma. And it is not so easy that in the face of the offense, you deal with the person in such a way that he or she may not feel hurt. He may feel hurt. You may be right in the correction you're giving, but he or she may feel hurt. And if he or she feels hurt, that is also is considered an offense. So my question is, how does one address someone who has offended him? Because I quite remember once you gave a lecture in Ghana and you were saying humility means one should be bold for the cause of Krishna. So being humble does not necessarily mean that anything anybody says, it just has to go. You have to say something to correct the person if it's going wrong. Meanwhile, by correcting the person, you might be committing offenses. So how best do we address someone who, according to our calculation, is derailing, is going wayward, or is doing something which is not expected of him or her? Hare Krishna.
We know we're all social beings. We are so much influenced by our, by the sanghas, quality of sadhu sangha. And the sangha is the gathering of people to access truth. So truth is not always palatable to one who is living a life of avoiding truth or running away from it. To one who's ready to accept the lie. When you care about someone, you want to do constantly things that will help address their higher needs, and that supports their higher sense of well-being. And so, we are never to just be impersonal and close our eyes and ears to someone who's poisoning themselves by engaging in improper activities. We also know in Kali Yuga, Kala Sudra Sambhava, basically people are all on the level of sudras. And so sudras have more trouble with the ego in the sense of not being able to honor truth. Notice among high-level sadhus and also in Sattva Yuga, but especially among high-level sadhus, that even when people would have differences, they come together, they discuss, they argue points, and then who is presenting the higher siddhanta, the other person accepts. But in Kali Yuga, even you can present so many factual concerns, and the opposite can happen. A person can become even more irate or more angry in such ways. So it becomes even more important, in Kali Yuga especially, not just to try to be right. Because what is the value sometimes of being right? In the process of being right, you've disturbed everybody. If we're trying to be the servants of the servants, then we want to be right, but in a way that it helps to encourage the other individuals and the environment. If we are right, in the process of being right, we cause others to make offenses, we cause others to miss the real point of what we're trying to share because we were right, but the way we said it, the way we addressed it, that our ego just assaulted their ego. And it's not always so easy because people are so lacking in really trying to connect with each other on a deeper level. People are so much into looking, trying to look good, and so much into using others for their own sovereign interest. And so the tendency is more to posture and to pretend and to front in unhealthy ways. So it is each person's duty to, as we're discussing, to try to be humble in the sense of putting another person's well-being forefront or foremost. And as you're putting that person's well-being foremost, then you do what you genuinely feel can be the best in honoring that person's spirituality. And you may be wrong. You may be right, you may be wrong. But even if you are wrong and your real desire was to try to serve that person, then the Lord in the heart understands the situation and will come to our aid in various ways. So often we forget that the communication is only a small part of it is what we externally say and do. So if we are addressing an issue and in our conscience we really don't care that much about that person, it's not going to have the same effect for them or for you or for the environment. But if we really are caring about that individual, so we have to look and see. Now what's coming up first, foremost? Is it quote? Is it anger? Or is it disturbance that that individual is hurting his or her own spiritual life by what they're doing? What comes up sense of arrogance and the condescending mood? Or is it a opportunity that you see, here's a chance to serve? And then you try to offer what service you think can best help. So that was a nice class, it seems, that Shivas gave with some significant points. And it's something to keep reminding us, because the process of devotion, you know, works. But there are so many, many, many failures because of the offenses. When we were reading Sunday and discussing from the book that Jamuna and Imalati Manjari wrote, and we were reading the letters, one or two of the letters, discussions that Lardini was sharing. And even before, when she left, when she was in Liberia, and she was communicating how her greatest concern, and we saw this constantly in her consciousness, her greatest concern was how to avoid offending Vaishnavas. She wasn't concerned about her own well-being, wasn't concerned about her own physical situation, her own fame, personality, all these things. Her major concern, she wasn't afraid of anything, anybody. Wasn't afraid of these horrible men, soldiers who had these guns. But her concern was of her not offending and not seeing anybody else offend Vaishnavas. Because once we can get these offenses out of our life, our spiritual life goes by leaps and bounds. And as we have so many offenses, so many things don't work and don't connect and don't develop because of the offenses. We have all seen time and time again people in high positions fall miserably. People who are doing very well at some point, and the life just goes totally different. You study it finely, minutely, you see case after case. It has to do with the offenses. Those offenses are opportunities where Krishna gives us some chances to take various tests for growth. But if we offend, like the offenses, then it means separate from Radha. Aparads means that one is not qualified for being in the land of pure love because of offensive mentality. Yes, there's a question. Raju has a question.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj, about offenses. I was wondering about the question regarding surrender, and I was thinking that that we know that Rupa Goswami said that we can engage in any one of the nine processes to surrender to Krishna. At the same time, I've listened to lectures where Srila Prabhupada says that even though one may engage in devotion in any one of these nine way that they may even think that they are performing these perfectly, that actually one has to get the mercy from the spiritual master, one has to get the mercy of sadhus, one has to get... So I guess my question is, should we be simply trying the best that we can to engage in devotional service without looking for the mercy, or should we be looking for the mercy, doing things that we feel will get us the mercy?
Following the instruction of a guru, we automatically get his blessings and mercy without following the instructions. The mercy will not come upon us. Mercy comes by pleasing the Guru. Śrīla Prabhupāda says, yasya prasāda bhagavat prasāda yasya prasāda nāgati kutarpi. Unless we please the spiritual master by following his instruction, one cannot make any advancement in spiritual life. So we get the mercy by following the instructions.
The mercy is foremost for someone who's done insane, crazy things, or someone who's tied down. It's very hard. It's very hard to get out. If it was easy, they wouldn't be tied, wouldn't be crazy. So there, some clear indications that for that person, they have, we were saying, made so many improper decisions. And so for them, even though in ultimate essence it's easy, but they are thinking that it's not, so they've made it complex. If that makes any sense. Then as we follow these angas, we follow all of them, even though one can bring one to pure love of God. So one of these dhan very, very profoundly can bring one to full Krishna consciousness. We do all of them because we don't do any of them so well, and we do all of them as more of an expression of positioning ourselves for the mercy. It's a little scary or confusing that we realize that even if we follow the rules and regulations perfectly, there's no guarantee of going back to God. Huh? You can follow all the rules and regulations and still not go back to God yet. That means you follow the rules and regulations like a yogi or jnani. They follow so many things they have more austerity than we can imagine sometimes. But the mercy is not there. The connection. The invitation to reside in the spiritual world has not been given to them. But now when we're connected with the parampara, we've been given the invitation. Now we have to do the necessary things to honor the invitation. So the biggest issue actually is mercy. Because we can do so many things, but we don't have the invitation to enter into the party, house, gathering. We don't get in. But the invitation says formal. The invitation says you must pay this, you must be on this time. The invitation says that some other stipulations is part of the invitation. So we have been given the invitation, particularly under the jurisdiction of Lord Nityananda's, his mercy. And so if we do the things that we have been required or asked to do, then we're able to fully get the benefits of the invitation. So really, mercy is even more important than any area of our devotion. But it's our following that allows us to honor the invitation of the mercy. So, really, in Kali Yuga, it really all comes down to mercy, because the craziness is so pervasive that it's almost impossible for such crazy people to rise above the craziness. but by mercy for those who have come into this world just for the purpose of trying to reclaim as many souls as possible. But when they come, they say, okay, here's opportunity, but there are certain requirements for those who can come alone. So it's somewhat like that. There are, the invitation is there, and that's the biggest issue. Because without that, there's no way of entering to the party or to the gathering. But that's not enough of its own. It's not just enough for the mercy if we don't do what's necessary to honor that invite. And if we do so many things and we don't have the invite, we still can't get in. Here's an example of often very, very important organizations, so-called. You cannot join them. You have to be invited by someone who is a part of that society. And this is how secret societies work also. You can't join. Someone who's already in that has to feel that you have qualities that will add or that will connect with what it is about. So there are so many religions, so many processes of yoga, so many organizations and so many things. But it is different from Vrindavan. Because nobody goes back to Vrindavan without being invited by a resident of Vrindavan. This is Prabhupada, this is Bhaktivinoda, this is Bhaktivinoda. There's a residence of Vrindavan. And this is what makes our society extremely special, that it's not just a religion, it's not just Dharma, it's not even about just serving the Lord in His form, actually, of opulence. But it is very special and confidential. And we see that even in country clubs, we see that even in some political organizations, some social organizations, where it's so exclusive that you have to be invited. And then once you're invited, that is a mercy extended, now you are expected to live up to certain criterion to honor that. So we have been given an invitation by the Goswamis. We're given an invitation by Krishna appearing in disguise himself to see that as many people as possible can get a chance to come and join him. But then there's qualifications. And so we are being given certain things to do. As we have been given the mercy, extended the invitation. But then, of course, the issue is, do we accept it? Sometimes you get an invitation and they say, please respond to a certain time. They want to know, you have been chosen or you have been singled out for being given the mercy to come and to be a part of this. One for 100 invitations went out and you were one of those persons. But still they want to know, you've been selected and the mercy, the opportunity is given to you, but will you honor it? And then it says, formal attire. So that means you honor it, then you expect it to come in a formal way and to be a part of the experience. So we should never minimize mercy, because when we minimize mercy, we suffer more, because many things will seem like impossibilities. And when we minimize mercy, we'll get distracted from so many of the day-to-day challenges. And when we minimize mercy, we can even become offensive to those who are distributing the mercy for us. When we minimize mercy, we can become possessors of proprietorship and false ego, and thinking that an accomplishment was based on our own endeavor, you know, primarily. And last, when we minimize mercy, we are like the kid saying no, you know, to greater happiness. So it's getting a little dark, and you have some of you have things to do, other things to do tomorrow for the Ratiyatra, maybe some things say tonight. But this mercy issue is a good one for us to take rest and think of, because so much success and a chance to really to grow and to go back to Godhead is actually based on mercy. And that's why we have such this intense sort of guru-disciple kind of relationship and intense posture of trying to capture the lotus feet of the dust, Jadiya Vaishnava Saviour Napayas, getting the dust of the feet of the sadhus. This is why we see in these advanced devotees, as you will read when you purchase the book tomorrow from Jamuna and Malati, be sure. They have limited stock available, so you grab yours as soon as they put it out. And you will see how Mother Ladini is constantly talking like this about not wanting to offend Vaishnavas. There's a major, biggest fear, and realizing that if you offend, mercy will be checked. You will limit your ability to take advantage of mercy. If you offend, you limit your chance to get that invitation. You limit your chance when the invitation is there to be able to honor it in such ways. So the mercy has been given by, you know, by Srila Prabhupada. Now the question is, do we have the invitation? What exactly do we do? Do we ignore it? Do we minimize the fact that we got such a thing that everybody has invitation? No. Special souls have been picked up in this lifetime to be touched by the great acharyas, by the great acharya, sharing the mercy that's coming to Lord Nityananda himself. So you take those things back with you. Those are the points that we brought up today, that the bodies and the environments and the challenges we have all have to do with not being successful in a previous life. Now, do we get it this time, or do we miss out again and have other or additional complexities? We look at those who make us disturbed, when we find ourselves experiencing so much of disturbance, or do we find ourselves looking more at trying to see everything in relationship to Krishna? We see things more in relationship to Krishna, then we're becoming Krishna conscious. So tomorrow we have the Ratiyatra, I think. Ravindra Supa, who normally comes, we're not sure whether he'll be here this time. Has anyone heard? We hear that he's sick. We're on a conference call about 2 hours a day, but I didn't get a chance to ask him about it. Ramapat Swami will be coming. Oh, he's not able to come as well. Okay. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know which one, the Ratiyatra Sunday is in Detroit. Some devotees will be going, of course, to that Ratiyatra instead of ours. We usually try to have the Ratiyatras so that no major Ratiyatras are conflicting with each other the same day or the next day. But it probably had to do with their permit. Maybe the only time they were able to get a permit, since we have ours the last Saturday of July every time. So it may be a little smaller this year, but we will create a big festive mood in our hearts. And as I said, I will be leaving, so some of you can be happy that I'll be gone for a while. Who is gone, now we can enjoy. I'm sure you're not thinking that way, especially since I wasn't so much available anyway this time. But somebody brought some cookies here. So me and Maharaj will pass it out for 2 minutes. While Shivas, why don't you just sing a little bhajan. And we'll join in. And you can come up and we can hand you one of these.